podcast with David Amoyala.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So today we are going to wrap up the weekend in Serie A, which started on Friday with that match between Juve and Inter. Since it's Monday, we're going to give our winners and losers. We are going to preview a little bit what's to come in the Champions League. Some huge games coming up for both Inter and Napoli. And we have Twitter questions from our listeners. And we're going to close out with a deep dive on Lazio with my colleague Stephen Moore from Di Marzio's site. But before we get to all that, I'm joined by our great friend, the co-host, producer of the podcast, Alex Goldberg. I'm sure you're in a good mood after Chelsea's win. But I'm going to take you back to Friday. I know it was a little while ago. So let me ask you, you know, Juve won in typical Juve fashion. What were some of your takeaways from that win against Inter, Alex?
Well, first off, I want to pat myself on the back, just a small pat on the back. I did predict on Thursday that Juve would win 1-0, and that's exactly what happened. But it's only a small pat on the back because Juve winning 1-0 is really not groundbreaking. But let's go to the actual game. Overall, David, I thought it was a very good game. I thought it was pretty evenly matched, but I thought the one difference was belief. And maybe it really showed when someone like Gagliardini had a great chance and he missed it. But overall, I feel like Inter thought they could compete. But I'm not sure Inter thought that they could steal the 3 points and maybe even get a point. But I certainly didn't get the feeling that Inter thought they could just outright win. I knew they felt a sense of belonging. But the difference between Inter and Juve is Juve believes they're going to win. They believe they're going to win at the start of the match. They believe they're going to win 20 minutes in. And they certainly believe they're going to win towards the end of the match. Now, beyond that, I really think the development, or really not just the development, but the breakout season that João Cancelo is having was certainly a decider in this match. But overall, João Cancelo is playing some truly amazing football. He is having one of the best breakout seasons of any player in a top five league. And then going from a younger fullback to an older center back, Giorgio Chiellini is still an absolute menace defensively. So I think two players like that really became the deciders at the end of the day. Miranda was not impressive for me at all. So I thought you saw a little bit of a parallel of what Inter are missing personnel-wise, especially not having De Vrij. But overall, I'll come back to it. My one big takeaway is that Inter competed. They felt like they belonged in the match, but I'm not sure Inter believed they could win the match. And I think it showed in some of their end product, where they had plenty of shots, but not many shots on target. So I think it came down to belief, David. That's my takeaway. What about you?
Yeah, you called a few people that are going to be in the winners and losers. So I'll leave my take on those players for after. But I know Inter's now 14 points behind, which is very significant since we're just in the first half of the season. But I think they have to leave the stadium thinking that, you know, they are getting, you know, they are starting to bridge the gap with Juve a little bit. I thought in the first half, Inter could have easily left the pitch, you know, leading at least 1-0. I thought they played really well. Then, you know, in the second half, once Allegri got to his bench and Spalletti to his, that's where we really saw the difference in quality. And look, Inter also had some injuries. They were without De Vrij. Nainggolan didn't play. So there are a little bit of excuses there, but Juve's depth obviously paid off in the long run. And I think, you know, one thing that Spalletti said in the pregame press conference that was really interesting is that Juve in recent years keeps taking away from their rivals in Serie A some of their best players. We saw it, of course, with Higuain at Napoli, Pjanic at Roma, where Spalletti was actually the manager, and more recently Cancelo from Inter. And obviously he made a huge impact, as you mentioned. He's definitely the best wing back in all of Serie A right now. And, you know, you compare this to Inter, who made the type of move Juve would have done at the beginning of their run of titles, signing a player on a free transfer, a valuable starter like Asamoah. Asamoah, you know, was somewhat responsible on the goal. Asamoah is a very good player, I think a more than adequate starter. But really the difference between Juve and Inter is the fact that Juve could go ahead and get Cancelo. But I do think Inter are definitely on their way. Keep in mind, Perisic this season has really not been a big factor, and he is someone that, you know, usually should make the difference for them. So yeah, Juve won in their typical fashion. Let's see if Inter now how they bounce back with the Champions League, because they have an important one. And this leads us to the next thing I wanted to talk to you about, Alex. We're recording this on Monday. Tomorrow, Napoli and Inter, you know, go into these matches in the Champions League in slightly different situations. So let me recap kind of where we're at, and I'm going to ask you, who do you think has a better chance? And I'm going to ask you to predict if these teams are going to get out of the group or not. So Napoli essentially needs a draw or better at Anfield. 2 out of 3 results, and they qualify. Liverpool have to win. So in a way, Napoli control their own destiny completely. Inter, on the other hand, they don't control their own destiny, but maybe on paper it's a little bit easier. They play at home against PSV, and they essentially have to get a better result than what Spurs are going to get at Camp Nou against Barcelona. Barcelona has essentially nothing to play for. So there is the potential for a biscotto there, and those that know Italian football know what I mean there. So let me ask you, looking at the situations, Alex, who do you think has the biggest hurdle to overcome, and how do you feel about their chances?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question, because as you detailed, both Napoli and Inter have different situations in front of them. It certainly makes the last stage and group stage in the Champions League very exciting. But I'm going to have to say Napoli has a better chance to move on, considering they just need to draw. Now, albeit it is at Anfield against Liverpool, who are certainly high-powered, and once they get going, they can get scary. But I think this Napoli, and this is no criticism to Maurizio Sarri, it's no insult to Maurizio Sarri, but I think this Napoli, with Carlo Ancelotti showing Napoli a different formation other than the 4-3-3, implementing a 4-4-2, having some versatility within this Napoli side, I think makes this Napoli much better equipped than maybe last year's Napoli to face this type of circumstance, knowing they need to stop Liverpool's attack and at least get a point. I feel like Ancelotti is actually one of the perfect managers to be the manager having this task ahead of them. So I really do think Napoli have a fairly good chance of at least getting a point. It's definitely going to be important, though, that Napoli keeps Liverpool scoreless for at least the opening 20, because if they get started early, Liverpool, then it could really get dangerous. But Napoli know how Liverpool are going to attack them. It's really no secret. Jurgen Klopp is going to have his Mane, Firmino, Salah trio ready to go. Their 4-3-3 formation ready to go. And it's really just going to be about, can Napoli stop them? And I think Napoli have a decent chance of doing that. Then conversely, I'm not saying that Inter are out of it, but as you said, it's not fully within their control. They play a PSV side that has nothing to play for, nothing to play for. They can't even make Europa League. And in the league, in their league, the Eredivisie, they're only 2 points ahead of Ajax. It's getting really close. So I'm not sure what a backup lineup for PSV looks like, but I got to think that they're not going to put all their eggs into this basket in the Champions League, because now they're fighting for the title in their own league. So Inter should have an easy time getting 3 points against them. And then, as you also pointed out, Tottenham face Barcelona, which normally may be tough, but Barcelona have nothing to play for. But I don't know. It's still two different situations that need to go in favor of Inter versus Napoli, who just need to get a draw. Both could advance. None could advance. But I'm saying Napoli is much more likely to advance rather than Inter. That's my opinion, David. What about you?
So, in my perspective, this match at Anfield, this is exactly why having Ancelotti is a huge plus for Napoli. I'm with you. This is no knock on Sarri, but this is really the difference between the two managers. You know, Ancelotti, and so one of our listeners was asking me, do you think Ancelotti has even more motivation based on Milan's horrible loss than Istanbul against Liverpool? And I was like, I don't think that's a factor, but there's so much at stake. And Ancelotti, you know, in a lot of ways, he's kind of following what Allegri did at Juve after Conte. Conte took Juve to B, and Allegri was like, I need to differentiate myself a little bit. And the way to do it is play better in Europe and make it more of a focus and bring confidence to the team. And I think Ancelotti's right on the cusp on being able to do this for Napoli. So I feel pretty decent about their chances. Not great. I also have to say I've noticed my jinxing powers are back really, really strong. So last Thursday, right after we recorded, talking about Alexandro, my colleagues Di Marzio and Fabrizio Romano, both of them, you know, talked about how Juve is on the verge of signing him to an extension. So my jinxing power are back. You know, an extension doesn't necessarily mean no transfer, but it just goes to show that right now what I say might come back to bite. So I'm going to go that both teams are going to be eliminated. The issue for Inter is they don't control their destiny. Nainggolan's going to be on the bench. You wonder if they're even going to risk him. Spalletti said today that, you know, Nainggolan's at the point where, you know, a small tackle might really set him back a lot. Vicino's out. He's been a very important player for them. So they're a little bit decimated in the midfield. But as you point out, PSV really doesn't have much to play for. Barcelona, on the other hand, their manager was asked by an Italian journalist about what his lineup was going to be against Spurs. And he flat out says, you know, the lineup is going to be based on what Barcelona need, not what Inter need. And if you're an Inter fan, that's probably not the best answer you wanted to give. Like I mentioned when I asked you, there's also the potential for the biscotto. Barcelona and Spurs could decide, you know, Barcelona could say, we're not going to hurt you, and then both of them get through the group. I will say, though, for both Napoli and Inter, they have to feel good about the fact that they are still in play. When the draws were made, back in the summer when these CL groups were assembled, you know, Napoli was essentially in the group of death, comparable to what Roma had last year. Right now, they control their destiny. They might win the group outright. Inter, on the other hand, you know, started the draw, you know, in the fourth pot. So they had their odds stacked against them. They've had some good results. So let's see if that moves forwards. In some ways, you know, for Inter, I think they're in pretty good shape in Serie A, you know, to finish top four. But, you know, I actually think, and this is something our friend Aaron Gelinella on the podcast said, Napoli could actually be a pretty intriguing team in the Champions League moving forward. I'm not saying they can win it at all, but they could have a Roma-like run, and that also comes with a lot of revenues. Inter, on the other hand, especially now, I'm pretty down on the Nainggolan deal in general. I think Inter made a lot of really good moves in the summer. That one, from the day it happened, I was one of the few skeptics on it, and once in a while I get it right. So I don't know. I don't see Inter making that long of a run. Maybe it's better if they focus on Serie A. But based on my jinxing ability, Alexandro, and then also I wrote a column, you know, taking not really a shot, but pointing out how Piontek and Simeone were struggling and they both scored right after the column came out. I'm going to say that both Italian teams are going to be eliminated. Hopefully I keep my streak going.
Seems like you're really playing into your jinxing powers there, David, with your predictions. So now let's move on to winners and losers. We had a great weekend of Serie A. Felt like we had a lot of draws. So without further ado, David, who are winners and losers of episode 176 of the Calcioland podcast?
Yeah, you're right. There were a lot of draws, but there were some pretty exciting ones with some pretty amazing finishes, both with the Lazio and the Roma match. So let's go back to Friday, and you mentioned a few of them. Chiellini immense in that match. You know, I'm often asked, you know, who do I think is better between Chiellini and Koulibaly right now? And I would say over the course of a season, I take Koulibaly, but in one big match, you still have to take Chiellini. I mean, he's a real gladiator and really, really came through there. We also had Mandzukic. What a surprise. Key game. Key goal, who scores it? Mandzukic. Not really a surprise there. Bentancur had another strong match. On the Inter side of things, we had Brozovic, who I thought was really outstanding in this game. What a breakout season for him. Then let's move on to Napoli, who torched Frosinone. We had Alex Meret make his debut for Napoli. Very good for him. He really wasn't tested, but it's good to finally see him on the pitch. We had Ounas, one of those players that Sarri pretty much ignored, and Ancelotti has given a few chances with a great goal. We had Zielinski, who set to sign an extension, who scored a goal. We have Milik, two goals. He's been on fire recently. Actually, if you look at Napoli, the goals by minutes played, he has the best average on the team. And then Ghoulam, who returned really important player for Napoli. It's been a long time since he's been active, but, you know, people forget. I mean, I almost forgot that before his first ACL injury, he was probably the best left back in Serie A. So very big return there for Napoli. Then speaking of jinxes, on my other podcast with a friend, Matteo Bonetti, CalcioCast, I had made fun of Cristante saying that, you know, Monchi must have been glad that when facing Cagliari, Barella was going to be suspended so he didn't have to have buyer's remorse, probably for what he spent on Cristante. He could have signed Barella. And of course, who scores? Cristante. So shout out to him. That's probably one of the only good positive things for Roma out of that match, and we'll get into it in the losers. Then another big winner has to be Empoli manager Iachini. Another win for them. Now they have 10 points in four matches since he took over from Drazzoli. A very good combination up front. Caputo, an old-school striker from Serie B, I think now has 8 season goals. And Lagumina, a player that Empoli invested significantly on in the summer with another goal. He's warming up. So those are for Empoli, shout out to them. Then Genoa, we had Prandelli's first match on the bench. He returns to Serie A after 8 years. Kind of a disappointing 1-1 draw at home, but we want to give a shout out to Piontek. He had played the full match in the Coppa Italia just a few days before against Virtus Entella, played 2 hours, played again this match, converted a penalty, had a good game overall. So maybe under Prandelli, he'll get his mojo back. Speaking of strikers who needed to get his mojo back, Giovanni Simeone on Fiorentina, 3-3 draw at Sassuolo. He started the match on the bench, came off the bench, and scored a goal. He really needed that. Then we had Atalanta, Zapata, Duvan Zapata, to me a very underrated striker, returns to Udine, had played there, scores 3 goals for Atalanta, didn't celebrate against his former team. And then we have the Milan match against Torino, 0-0, disappointing. But Donnarumma had a great save. I think aside from the derby against Inter, which obviously is something rightfully people are going to remember, I actually think Donnarumma's had a good season if you count to what he's done with the Italian national team. And also I want to give a shout out to 2 center backs on Milan. Zapata had a really good game. And even Abate, who's been really kind of a revelation. I almost had a chuckle. One of the accounts I like on Twitter, Statuto, tweeted that Abate is a better center back than Bonucci. I'm sure a lot of Milan fans probably feel that way. And on the flip side, Alex, you'll be happy. This is starting to look like money in the bank for Chelsea. Both Bakayoko and Olaina had really good matches. Bakayoko for Milan, Olaina for Torino. There's options to buy for around 50 million for both. As it stands now, both look like players that Milan and Torino would like to keep and make into long-term starters. So those are our winners. Let's go to the losers. And as I mentioned, Mandzukic and Brozovic, who were on Croatia's national team, they've had very, very good seasons despite not really having much of a preseason ritiro with the team. The flip side is Perisic has been absolutely dreadful this season. So poor match there. Frosinone, I have to say, although they have 5 more points than Chievo, I think they're more of a lock to be relegated than Chievo, who you can never count out. Shout out to their manager, Di Carlo at Chievo. At least they're showing signs of life. But Frosinone lost 4-0 to Napoli. So that was a tough one there. Now, Roma, who were up 2-0, and I think Cagliari was down to 9 men, and gave up 2 late goals. They gave up 6 late goals so far this season. Out of 18 possible points against Atalanta, Chievo, Bologna, Spal, Udinese, and Cagliari, they only have 3 points. This is courtesy of John Solano, tweeted this. So very, very rough. I also have to say, on FIFA, I've been using them. I like to use pretty much every Italian team, do a little bit of the season to kind of get a feel for them, look at the CL and all. The rankings of FIFA players for Roma are absolutely dreadful. I don't know who did those. They need to – I know Roma's been bad this season, but Olsen is absolutely awful in that game, and some other Roma players could really use a boost. So if anyone's listening from FIFA, please get on that. I know Roma's been bad, but not – quite that bad. Another loser, unfortunately, I have to give another, put him in this column once again, Milinkovic-Savic, another really, really poor performance against Sampdoria. Lazio fans who had previously put out a banner criticizing him and Luis Alberto, calling them mercenaries. Now they call them a gypsy, a zingaro. So things are starting to go south for Milinkovic-Savic. We'll get into him a little bit more in our interview with my colleague Steve Moore. I think he's a little bit more optimistic than he is. I still have faith in his ability, but this season is really taking a turn for the worse. And last two, Pippo Inzaghi, definitely starting to be in trouble. Bologna lost to Empoli. I didn't watch the game, although I've read that supposedly Bologna played pretty well. But he's in big trouble, and we'll talk about it more in the questions. And the final loser is this tweet that I saw from Milan yesterday. And Milan had this tweet, you know, saying that they stand against piracy of watching streamed games, which, look, I'm completely in favor of that. I'm not a proponent of streaming in any way. I believe, you know, athletes, anyone should be paid for their work. And, you know, the rights to buy sporting events are very expensive. And I think the stations that invest a lot and employ a lot of people to cover the league should get that. So that goes without saying. I feel strongly about that. But Milan decided to put Pepe Reina as the spokesperson for this. And basically, Pepe Reina is there talking about how, you know, illegal piracy is really bad and it hurts the passion of footballers. And I have to say, that's probably the worst person you could have picked. Not because Pepe Reina is not a good guy, but Pepe Reina is a backup keeper who doesn't play at all in Serie A, only plays in the Europa League. And he's making $6 million before taxes a season. And this is the guy you're going to put out there to say, hey, we're against piracy. It hurts our passion when you're pirating a game. If anything, that would give me motivation to maybe say, why are these guys getting paid so much? Maybe I should look into that. So I definitely agree with the message that Milan did. But Don Draper from Mad Men would not approve of that commercial as a whole. So I agree with the message, but I am going to shoot the messenger in this case. So one person that I'm never going to shoot as a messenger is the people that send in the questions for our podcast. As usual, we get a lot of really good ones. This time of year, I'm not surprised we have more on transfers. Please keep sending them in on Serie A as well. We don't have any today on movies, TV, music, although you guys know I also love those, as well as podcasting and journalism. So which one are we going to go over today, Alex?
All right, David, our first Twitter question is from someone named Prisoner of the Moment, and they ask, is Serie A already finished in December?
So shout out to Prisoner of the Moment, one of the catchphrases that we do use on the podcast quite a bit. On top of being called Prisoner of the Moment, he also has a picture of Luciano Moggi as his avatar. So I take it he's a Juve fan gloating about the league or basically already being over in December. And I think as far as the title race goes, probably. I think both you and I didn't really expect much of one to begin with. But this Juve, I mean, they're off to their best start, I think, ever. Maybe one of the best starts in the history of the top five leagues. So, yeah, but I think there's a lot at stake in other ways. I think especially the Champions League spots, for a variety of reasons, it's very juicy this season. For both Roma, Milan, it has implications also for financial fair play, making it a lot. So to me, there's a lot of stake with that. Just to me, look, you know, we've been covering Serie A for a while. Juve a lot of times feels like a prohibitive favorite, but there's always a lot of great angles to look at. So I do get it, people that want to dismiss Serie A without really watching it. It's very easy to do with Juve, but there's plenty of stake. Also, the race to avoid relegation. It's pretty interesting this season. So I always find, as far as the title goes, yeah, absolutely. It probably is finished. But more so than in years past, I'm pretty fascinated by the other ones.
All right, David, next Twitter question. Who is more important to their team, Pjanic, Brozovic, or Frank Kessie?
It's a great question. And I have to say my knee-jerk reaction right when I got this would have been to say Frank Kessie. And I think you can make a great case for him. But I'm going to say the fact that Bakayoko has been so good recently, maybe he's not as important. And Kessie deserves a lot of credit because he was hurt and still played pretty much all the time. Last season, I think barely missed any games. Availability is an important ability for sure. But I think Bakayoko is probably a better player, often, you know, when they play at the peak of their power. So maybe Kessié isn't as important. Pjanic, you can make a case, one of the best midfielders in all of Serie A, but maybe with Bentancur's rise, maybe not as important. I've never been a huge, huge Pjanic guy, although I do respect him a lot as a player. I just find him a little bit inconsistent and disappears in some big moments. But, you know, you could say he's, I would say, the best player out of the three. But I have to say, as I've been saying all season long, as Brozovic goes, so does Inter. So if you say who's the most important, I would say right now Brozovic, because they really don't have an alternative to him. And he's been, for his standards, really, really consistent this season.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think he's most important to his team out of those three. All right, David, let's move to managers. What is the latest on Eusebio Di Francesco and Pippo Inzaghi's job status?
Yeah, so both of them have been on the hot seat, especially after the results this weekend. And I have to say, I have to wonder if there was an international break. And thankfully, there isn't. I mean, to scare you guys, but let's say hypothetically there was. I wouldn't have been surprised if both of them got sacked. But they are essentially getting at least one more match. So Roma's on retreat right now. The ownership and the management team, so Monchi, Baldissoni, and Totti right now seem to put the onus more on the players than Di Francesco. So they're giving him at least one last chance, but he has to win against Genoa, and these are exactly the type of matches that Roma has struggled against. So let's see what happens there. He could be on the hot seat. We've spoken of Paulo Sousa being the favorite to replacement, Montella potentially, and the new name is Laurent Blanc. I've seen some, you know, talk of Conte and supposedly Totti and De Rossi reaching out to him. That would really surprise me for a variety of reasons. Salary alone for Conte. Can you just imagine a Conte press conference, Alex, after they sell a big-name player? Say they sell Manolas or Dzeko. Can you just imagine what Conte would be like in a press conference? The other thing with Di Francesco is, look, you know, if they sack him, then it becomes all the attention is going to be on Monchi, who, quite frankly, I think is more responsible than Di Francesco so far for how things are going. So let's see what happens against Genoa. Pippo Inzaghi, on the other hand, right now, Bologna is in the relegation zone. I said it when the season started. I could see them absolutely going to Serie B. I'm not sure I can really blame them. They really don't have much talent on the squad. I actually think Chievo has more talent than Bologna. But the match against his former team, Milan, at home could be decisive for him. And there's buzz that Donadoni could be returning if he's sacked. So interesting to see that Bologna-Milan isn't until next Tuesday. So we're going to have to wait and see till then what happens there.
You know, I definitely like to be correct, but I'm actually sad I've been this correct on Roma. When they were winning 2-0 over the weekend, I thought to myself, good for them. And then I didn't tune in for the rest of the game, and I see the result 2-2, and I just had a cynical chuckle. Like, yep, of course, they couldn't even hold on to those 3 points. But with all that said, I still feel like it would be unfair on Di Francesco if he got sacked, but that's just the nature of the business. So, Dave, let's move on to a whopper of a question. What are the odds Koulibaly joins Manchester United in January?
Okay, so I woke up Sunday to a ton of tweets asking me about this. You know, the January window is coming. So look, very simply, it doesn't really surprise me that Man United, any super rich club, would be interested in Koulibaly. Makes perfect sense. I don't watch enough of the other leagues to say he's the best defender in the world. I will say of the defenders that I watch over the course of a season, there's probably no one I'd rather have. I'd probably rather have Chiellini in one huge game. But Koulibaly is an absolute beast. So I don't blame any club or any journalist linking a top club to Koulibaly. But the odds of him leaving in January, I have to say, I'd be absolutely shocked if this happens. Anyone who follows Serie A knows how tough Napoli are to negotiate with. We know Koulibaly is really happy at Napoli, signed an extension. He could have left in years past, never really came close. And I know there's this theory that if Napoli get eliminated in the Champions League, that they'll sell him and they can't win the title anyway. I just don't buy that. I just don't think Napoli were planning particularly on getting out of this group stage. Maybe they did. So I don't think they were planning the start of the season. Oh, if we don't make it, It's a surprise we're going to move Koulibaly. I just don't see it. Players of his caliber genuinely don't move in January. It's pretty rare, although we've seen Man United get Alexis Sanchez last January. But I'd just be really surprised. There's no will of the player pushing to leave Napoli, and I think that's what it would take. And another wrinkle, it's probably not a big one. The January transfer window in Serie A is very short, closes January 19th. So it would be really, really hard for Napoli to find a comparable replacement. So I'd be really shocked if this happens. But again, I don't blame any, you know, people linking Manchester United to Koulibaly. If the report is Manchester United is interested in Koulibaly, why wouldn't they be? But if the reports start getting into, yeah, he wants to go and there's a deal and Napoli would be interested, that's when I start being pretty skeptical. I just don't see it. I just don't see De Laurentiis do it. Napoli is one of the few teams in Serie A who really have no financial needs. They are in very good shape, with or without qualifying out of the group stage of the Champions League.
I guess if De Laurentiis hates Chelsea so much, theoretically he could do that just to piss off Sarri and Chelsea even more. But boy, would that make me upset as a Chelsea fan. So let's move on. This is a good transition. Who has a better chance of joining Chelsea between Hisaj, Gonzalo Higuain, and Piontek?
All right, so let's start with Higuain. So yesterday, Leonardo said that Ibrahimovic won't be coming to Milan after all. Not a big surprise. It seemed the Galaxy. It seems maybe Raiola was using Milan a little bit as leverage to get more money. But in any event, it seemed Ibrahimovic wanted some guarantees from the Galaxy. He's getting it, so he's staying put. But even had Ibrahimovic come, I would have been really surprised that Higuain would leave in January. His deal to come to Milan from Juve was a little complicated because of the financial fair play issues for Milan. I think they paid $18 million for the loan. There's the option to buy set at the amount that would make the total deal the exact amortized value left on Juve's books for Higuain. So I think, you know, that's really a loan deal. That's like a loan deal in disguise, like it was just done for financial reasons. Juve and Milan have a great relationship. Would surprise me if more players get involved between the two clubs. But I really don't see Higuain leaving in January. Now, is he going to be at Milan in the summer? That's another question. But Milan need him. I mean, with Ibrahimovic not coming, I think they'll get another striker, but it won't be a starting caliber one. I like Cutrone. He had a huge miss yesterday. But Milan's already a striker short as it is now. So I'd be really, really surprised. So let's put him last. I'm going to say Piontek. He had that great start to the season. Supposedly, Genoa's president Preziosi turned down an offer from Napoli for him. Maybe he regrets not just closing it right there and then. They expected him to continue and set his value. I don't think it's impossible that Piontek leaves and joins Chelsea in January. But I would say, you know, are we really sure? I know Morata's been terrible. I get that. But do we really know how good Piontek is? Like, the minute the schedule got a little bit harder in Serie A, the minute the managers in Serie A started to have game fill on him, that's when he stopped scoring. So I'd be a little bit concerned there. I hope he proves me wrong and turns out to be a really, really great player. But I'm just not sure he's the type of guy that makes a difference for Chelsea right away. Hisaj, on the other hand, is a pretty interesting situation. Unlike Koulibaly, he is somewhat expandable at Napoli because Maksimovic has been moved to a right back position. They have Malcui, who's been pretty good. Hisaj just doesn't strike me as someone who's an ideal fit for Ancelotti. So this isn't impossible that he moves. Now, the deal between Napoli and Chelsea when Sarri went is they made a gentleman agreement that Chelsea couldn't use the exit clause on Napoli players, but if they were interested, they would have to negotiate with Napoli directly. Hisaj has a very high exit clause, $50 million. I definitely don't think he's worth that. If Chelsea wanted to come even close of offering that, I think De Laurentiis would get on the private jet with Hisaj to personally deliver him there. But I think Hisaj could be a pretty good addition for Chelsea. You know, he's a pretty complete fullback. He's actually a good defender. We don't see that often with wingbacks, and obviously someone that Sarri knows really well, even from their time together at Empoli. So this of the three is the one that seems like the likeliest, and I wouldn't exclude it altogether.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not really jumping up and down at all for any of those three to come to Chelsea. But conversely, I'm not totally against any of those three coming to Chelsea. FYI, I'm probably going to do a YouTube video very shortly on the potential of Hisaj coming to Chelsea, since that seems to have the most legs of the three. All right, next Twitter question also involves a little Chelsea. Who is more likely to be playing in Serie A in January between Cesc Fabregas and Mesut Ozil?
Well, I think Fabregas, there's actually a pretty good chance. I would say there's a 50% chance he'll join Milan. If you read my columns on ESPN, if I say 50%, that's a really high percentage. He has an expiring contract. Milan and Chelsea have great relationship. There's the Bakayoko deal up in the air. Leonardo has a good relationship with Chelsea's board. Milan knows plenty of agents that can work as intermediaries with Chelsea that Chelsea has dealt with. So I think there's actually a pretty good chance this deal happens. Last night, Leonardo said Ibrahimovic isn't coming, but left the door pretty open to Fabregas. So I think there's a pretty decent chance there. Now, that I haven't read too much about this, but there seems to be some momentum for Ozil potentially joining Inter in January. I know Inter were looking at him when he had an expiring contract. He seemed to be pretty open to go in there, just asked for humongous wages. I don't follow, you know, the Premier League that closely. I'm not too familiar with his situation there. But Inter certainly could use a midfielder there. The Nainggolan deal, I hate to keep bringing it up. Maybe they'd like a do-over on that one. So let's see there. I definitely think, though, for Fabregas, there is something concrete and some momentum going for it.
Very interesting, David, because I'm not at all married to the idea of Cesc Fabregas staying for the rest of the season at Chelsea. However, he really is the one viable backup to Jorginho. So if he were to leave, I feel like Chelsea would have to replace Cesc in January, so that one will be interesting. All right, David, next Twitter question, and it comes from Stevie Z, and he asks, should Mancini consider selecting Quagliarella?
So shout out to Stevie Z, sends a lot of really good questions, so I appreciate him. Keep them coming, buddy. Yeah, I have to say Quagliarella, you know, the games for Italy and the Euro qualifier, they're really important, not just to get to the Euro, but also to improve their ranking. Italy needs all the help they can get when we do the World Cup qualification draw. So I think the games coming up for Italy are like really, really important, and you have to put out your best players. We've been saying that the main thing in Italy's lacking right now is a consistent goal scorer, and Quagliarella's been absolutely immense for Sampdoria, by the way, was Mancini's club when he was a player. So maybe he gets a little enamored with the colors. So I'm actually in favor of this. And I've been seeing some buzz that Quagliarella could be the striker that Milan goes after if they don't sign Ibrahimovic. And I actually think that would be a lot of fun because he's been really great. And it feels like he's played for almost all the top clubs in Italy. And he kind of misses that one. So let's see what happens there. But in the national team, no brainer. I would definitely call Quagliarella.
All right, David. Last Twitter question. This is a very interesting one. Have people overinflated Federico Chiesa's value?
So I'm going to go back to the first question by the listener who named himself prisoner of the moment. I don't want to be too much of a prisoner of the moment because, look, we praised Chiesa a lot at the beginning of the season. When we were talking about the Italian national team, I had Chiesa as one of the players that just has to play all the time. So I'm not going to be a hypocrite and, you know, and say that I was a prisoner of the moment then and now I'm just going to trash him. But look, recently, he hasn't been good. It's not a good sign that the main thing he's known for is diving. I think he only has 2 goals, 2 assists this season. Hasn't been a difference maker for Fiorentina. And the whole point was like he's going to stay at Fiorentina one more season where he's comfortable, where he could play regularly, and everyone was applauding it. And now it's becoming the flip side. Now people are saying, oh, he's like Berardi. He should have left. He's just stalling now. So it becomes really easy to use that one way or the other. So, look, I think he's a great talent. Is it possible that because his father was a popular player, he gets rated a little bit higher? Probably. I think that's pretty fair to say. But we also have seen some great games from him to start the season. So I think he's going through a bad spell, but it's important for him to turn it around. So I want to take this opportunity to thank all the listeners who sent in questions. We appreciate your support. You guys have been great with the reviews on iTunes. Please keep doing them. It only takes you a couple, like 15 seconds to do it. Leave us 5 stars. It really helps. And keep the questions coming for Thursday's podcast. I also want to give a shout out to one of our former guests who I hope to have back, Ben Golliver. We've had on a few times. He just got a great job at the Washington Post. A lot of the sayings that I use on the podcast and on Twitter, I've stolen from him and I haven't been afraid to admit it. You know, don't judge people on their best day or their worst day. And I was thinking about that today is Higuain's birthday. And I think there's no player who's a better example of that. You know, 100 career, over 100 career goals at Real Madrid, record-breaking season in Serie A, record that stood for 60 years. He broke it. That matters too, not just the bad moment in a big match. So shout out to Ben Golliver, great journalist, a great role model for anyone who wants to make it in this game. And we're going to close it out with an interview with my colleague Steve Moore from the Marzio site talking about Lazio, and we'll chat with you guys on Thursday.
Okay, for the interview part of the podcast, you guys know that we often like to check in on the top teams in Serie A. We have some regular guests that follow the teams closely that give us their perspective on it. And today we are welcoming my good friend, Stephen K. Moore, who works with me on the Marzio site and a bunch of other places, which you'll hear towards the end of the podcast, to talk about Lazio, a team definitely in the headlines. We had prepared this interview even before Saturday's quite eventful game that Lazio had against Sampdoria. So, Steve, welcome back to Calcioland. It's a real pleasure to chat with you today.
It's really good to be here. Thanks for having me on again, David.
Cool. So, Steve, I thought that match against Sampdoria, in a lot of ways, is a great parable for what we've seen from Lazio in general this season. You know, one step forward, one step back. Roller coaster ride, Ciro Immobile in a lot of ways, carrying the team a little bit. So without getting too much in the game, tell me more overall, what is your assessment of the Lazio season? I know there was a lot of hype rightfully going in to the summer on the team. They had kept a lot of their best players, made some pretty shrewd acquisitions. So have things gone as planned as you thought, or have they disappointed you a little bit?
Firstly, I'm going to have to go on the disappointment train from you on Lazio this season. But there are main reasons for this. I believe that last year's a breakout season in a lot of different ways. One was the Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto. Another one was Simone Inzaghi, and then the Lazio team in general. If you look at this team on paper, they do have a few good players, but the reason why they did so well is because they were able to come together and make this 3-5-2 formation work so well. The issue is now it's well known. It's not the Lazio anyone is used to seeing compared to last year when we were having free-flowing attacking football. And I feel like Inzaghi is struggling to change his ways and fans are getting on his back, but he wants to stick to his day one tactics. And being an attacker himself, I don't feel he has that defensive knowledge that is going to help Lazio compact the back end. We saw last season they almost conceded 50 goals, and people didn't take this into consideration as much because we were scoring goals. But now we're starting to do that as well. So it's a little bit frustrating on both ends. But that's kind of what we're seeing now. What they're doing when they play.
Yeah, interestingly, you know, they gave up a lot of goals and they lost, without a doubt, their best defender in De Vrij. I think Acerbi has been a more than adequate replacement. But yeah, everything else back there leaves a little bit to be desired. As you said, they're not scoring enough to compensate for it. So last season, Simone Inzaghi was really kind of the it coach, I would say, the up-and-coming Italian coach. There were even Juve fans starting to say, hey, maybe this is the guy to eventually replace Allegri. But, you know, this season it's been, as you mentioned, not quite the same. He's been pretty stubborn, doesn't seem to have many alternatives. So we've seen Lazio already go on a week-long retreat, which is usually a sign that the club has some concerns. And maybe this is more putting the onus on the players. But how do you assess Simone Inzaghi's job security at this moment?
At this current moment, I'm going to have to go with secure. Like I said, when you look on paper, this team, if you were to compare it to a Milan, a Juventus, a Napoli, it's very under quality. The value of the squad is even a lot less than these teams if we're going off of that. But we are picking up points. It's just we're not securing the points that we should be securing. And the way we're playing currently, and everyone has these small little droughts, but it's not the way that the club wants to see it. And that was the main reason, I believe, for this week-long retreat. But Claudio Lotito doesn't like wasting or spending money. He's very careful and smart with what he does. So unless, I believe, a pointless run starts to occur, I think he will be safe. And he's even said so himself at that retreat. He said, I believe that Tare, I believe that Inzaghi will be here for quite some time for the next season to come.
Yeah, I can see it also because there's really no really exciting replacements potentially on the horizon. So two players that have been certainly a reason for the big drop-off compared to last season are Milinkovic-Savic and Luis Alberto. We've talked about them the last time you were on, which I think was about 5-6 weeks ago. So let's focus more on the short term. In the more recent games, so since the last time we talked, which of the two have given you more reasons to be optimistic they're getting back on track?
It's hard to pick one, I'll be honest, but since we're seeing more of Milinkovic-Savic, I'm going to have to choose him. So playing obviously a lot more than Luis Alberto, and he's being benched. But both have set such high expectations when we compare to last year. It's hard to match that. They're both breakout seasons for both the players in different ways. Blinkovic is a younger player coming up, midfielder, while Luis Alberto, he'd been at Liverpool. He had short stints in Spain, and then he just had that breakout season last year after giving that chance. But since he's been injured, he just hasn't really picked up form again, and same with Blinkovic. But the thing is, watching Blinkovic play in the middle of the midfield, he's doing what he needs to do. He's pinging the long balls. He's winning balls 50-50 in the middle. He's trying to get up for those headers. But the only thing he's not doing is contributing goals and assist-wise, which everyone expects him to do. So without even watching him play, people look at his point tally and they just say, hey, this isn't what we're used to seeing. He's not doing too well. And same thing with Luis Alberto. But when you look at, he's played every single game, and that's probably because he's one of the best in that position, I believe, even the Serie A still to this day. So I definitely say it doesn't matter the current form they're on right now. I do believe, optimistically wise, Milinkovic-Savic will come back, and he's been showing those stints a little bit, but not too much. It's very hard to choose between the two right now, though.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm going to give a slight edge to Luis Alberto, but it's probably because I have such high expectations for Milinkovic-Savic.
That's true.
So yes. Let's talk about, I mentioned earlier Acerbi, who I think has been really good this season, rightfully getting selected to the Italian national team. I think Correa has been really good. He kind of reminds me a little bit how Patrick Schick was like a super sub for Samp when he came on, and Correa has been really good. But two other players that Lazio invested fairly significantly in the summer, for a variety of reasons, haven't done too much yet. And this is Berisha and Durmisi. And sporting director Tata actually has a really good track record with finding these guys abroad, not paying too much for them, and doing well. Like Marusic, to me, is a good example. So tell me a little bit, what type of impact do you expect Berisha and Durmisi to be able to make in the second half of the season?
Starting off just with Berisha at the beginning of the season, it kind of sucked that he got injured right away. And then you see Durmisi, he plays his Europa League start, he debuts and gets injured right away. I personally think both these players could have had a very big impact even from the beginning of the season if they were given a start to play. Durmisi, we can start off with him. He's obviously made for that left wing. He's a left-footed player. We see Lubic playing on the left midfield. He's a right-footer. We don't have too many left-footed players except for Radu on that left back side. We've even tried to say, hey, let's try Acerbi on the left back position, but he is a central defender. So I think Durmisi was a replacement meant for either the wing-back formation on the left or to replace Radu when time comes due, which we haven't seen too much of. I hope we do, and I hope he's able to shine like we've seen, like Marusic, for example, last season. But if we look at Berisha, he was someone who has experience, who has been inspected and investigated for quite some time. And I like the way he plays. You see him with Kosovo when he's on international break. He does very well moving up and down the pitch and attacking or just center midfield position. The issue is the midfield is so packed right now. You're not going to see Milinkovic-Savic sit off. So it'll be hard to see if they're able to get into the team, which will probably be the Europa League more likely. I think Berisha will have a little bit more of an impact, but Dermisi in the long run if he's able to stay.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if Dermisi is Lulic's long-term replacement, and maybe Berisha was brought in case Milinkovic-Savic was sold. And the Tamarazio likes to kind of be one step ahead, so then they don't have to overpay. Like they like you mentioned, Lotito's very careful, but they usually really know what they're doing. So Lazio, you know, this season they've lost pretty much against all the top teams. They've done well up until the Chievo match against the lower table team. So you know, they're kind of in limbo between the Europa and the Champions League spot. But we still have a lot of games to go. I think the main competitors for Lazio for that fourth spot are Milan and Roma. I know you follow the league closely, and you follow Lazio as your team. Which of these two teams worries you the most between Milan and Roma?
I'm gonna have to say Milan. Right now, they are even taking advantage of Lazio and Roma's struggles. Currently, both Roman teams are not doing too hot. But I even expect with their transfer window that it's coming around January, Gattuso's been able to keep his injured squad afloat throughout this whole time. And if the linked players rumored to come to Milan, such as Ibrahimovic and Fabregas, come into this side in January, that even just further bolsters the experience and quality of the side. And when you have those main players coming back, I think they can really make a push after coming together last season and this season.
Interesting. So you mentioned the transfer market, and you've been one of our newer additions on the Marzo site, and you've been doing a great job. So let me ask you this. Which positions do you think Lazio is going to look at in January? And if you could, in an ideal world, write about players you'd like to see Lazio linked to on the Marzo site. So here I'm asking your personal opinion. Which players would you like to write about as being linked to Lazio?
So currently, what I'm going to have to say with the depth and defense, I would say someone on the right flank, because this is where we've been struggling, I feel, the most. We see defenders just in general in that back three. We have had our points of Radu and Acerbi cementing their spots, and that other spot has been alternated. Wallace is taking over right now. We've seen Luis Felipe. We have Bastos. We have Caceres. We have so many players there. Maybe there's potential to upgrade quality in one of them if, let's say, one or two of them are to leave in January, but I don't think Otito's going to spend more money on a defender when we already have so many of them. So I think we have to take a look at the right flank, and this is where I feel we need to improve. We saw Marusic have a great season last season. We saw him start okay, but he got replaced by Patrick. He came and did good, but now he's kind of dropping off as well. Bast is 34. He has no league appearances. We don't have anyone else for that right flank. So in an ideal world, I would want someone who has experience in the Serie A, who's Italian, who knows the league well, who knows a three-back formation with wing-backs well. I'd have to say Chelsea's Zappacosta or even Manchester United's Darmian. We look at their playing time. It's diminishing. It hasn't really gone up. You see them sometimes play, but they're more of a Europa League or lower-tier game players. So I believe someone like that, in my personal opinion, even Zappacosta being born in Lazio and Soda, that would just suit well, even if it's on loan for half the season, to get to compete with Matusic and Patrick to make them play even better and raise the quality of the squad. That's definitely the position we need to bolster, I feel.
Excellent. I definitely agree with a lot of what you said there. So as I mentioned, I got to know Steve through Di Marzio's site. You guys, he's going to be one of the people who's going to be tweeting out news in English. So, you know, become friends with him. He'll answer your questions. He's a great guy. But what I like about having you on Di Marzio's site is you write in a lot of other places. You kind of are using Di Marzio's site as a springboard for your other work. So tell our listeners some of the other things you've been working on in recent weeks and what you have planned in the coming months.
For sure. So since joining Gianluca Di Marzio and the whole site of starting my kind of journalism or writing career, I've started my own site about Lazio called the_Laziali on Twitter. So it's a website that's dedicated to everything in Lazio-oriented or when they go to the national teams. We write our own features, our own transfer reports, everything related to Lazio in the English language, just due to the fact that we didn't see too much of that. It was more so the bigger top-tier team. So we were able to kind of tie in a lot of the markets around the world of Lazio fans and bring them all together into different groups. So I do run that. And in addition, just writing for different several sites, like Breaking the Lines, for example, is another great one. Yeah. I'm writing just for. So in the months to come, hopefully on school break this upcoming, I'm able to write for a little bit more and just expand my knowledge of just exactly everything that's going on in this specific industry. So it's very fun so far.
Awesome. Well, you've been doing a great job. I look forward to working alongside you during the January window. In the meantime, keep up the great work. I'm sure we'll talk in the new year about Lazio. So thank you so much for joining me, Steve, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for having me on, David. See you.